This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. November is Men's Health Awareness Month, so Talkspace wants guys to know that being prepared for life's biggest challenges and opportunities means prioritizing mental health, too. Talkspace can help you go beyond fine-tuned workouts, supplements, and productivity hacks. Talkspace can help you fine-tune your inner life so you can succeed in being the best version of yourself in any situation. And with Talkspace, you can get therapy from anywhere and on your time. You can even text your therapist between sessions. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace takes most insurance, and most insured members have a $0 copay. Men's Health Awareness Month is the perfect time to reach out to Talkspace. Now, get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com and save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com. That's Talkspace.com, promo code SPACE80.
Welcome in to another episode of Tailgate Talk SEC. I am Will Thomas. 1 week in the books, and what a fun week it was. Some of the games, maybe they weren't as high scoring, high flying as we wanted them to be, but we had a lot of great competitive games, a lot of great competition, a lot of top 10 matchups, and I think it told us a lot about what we can expect for the rest of this season. All of that I will get into later. But for right now, let's just run through game by game. Let's just run through this chronologically with the big games at least, and I'll touch on these smaller games that happened as well. So starting off Friday, that Auburn versus Baylor game. Pre-game, I talked some of the keys I talked about was that Baylor did not profile as a team who can really wreak havoc on opposing QBs. And that seemed to be mostly true. All right, Baylor only got one sack, and Arnold was absolutely flying around the field with his legs. He ran for 137 yards and two touchdowns. Now, part of that was because Baylor did actually get pressure, but they don't necessarily have the gap integrity and the overall like freak athlete on the defensive line to catch up to a guy like Arnold. And we saw that. We saw the consequences of that, right? It was that Arnold ran wild. He scored twice, really set the tone for Auburn on offense that entire day. His legs were a major X factor. Defensively, I talked about how Keldrick Falk and the rest of that Auburn D-line really had to play incredibly. It was okay. It was okay. I mean, I think they had four total sacks. Falk did get one of his. Kayron Crawford and Robert Woodyard Jr. also got one. It didn't seem like they were dominating the lines. I expected Baylor to really come out and dominate at least the defensive front. And they didn't really do that. They got their plays where, you know, their best players looked like it. But they didn't dominate the lines the way I anticipated them to do against this Baylor team. Now, is that cause for concern? I don't necessarily think so, right? Because I think on the D-line, like a guy like Falk and some of the other younger pieces, they just need to get used to the season still. On the offensive line, you have two transfer tackles. And we saw there was that sequence, I think it was in the second quarter, maybe it was the first, where Xavier Chaplin and Mason Murphy had back-to-back false starts, one of them for each. I mean, that's just the things that you get with transfer offensive tackles. But then that didn't happen again for them the rest of the game. So it seemed like their O-line began to mesh really well, and Arnold was able to navigate through it. Defensively, maybe it wasn't consistent, but they definitely had their moments where they were good enough to go get to Sawyer Robertson and really swing that game. Rayshon Pleasant's kick return in the late third quarter of that game, I mean, that was such a major turning point because Baylor had just punched it in to make it a one-score game. You kind of felt the energy shifting towards Baylor again, you know, just one stop, and then we can go down and tie the game. And then 98 yards straight through the heart of Waco for Rayshon Pleasant to put the lead back up at 14. And then at that point, Auburn was in control, really the rest of the game. I mean, watching Jackson Arnold, I've talked a ton about how I thought my issue for him last year with Oklahoma was confidence. Because that whole situation was just a nightmare. Nothing was good. Everyone was hurt. The schemes weren't working. There was pressure in his face all the time. He didn't have the great playmakers around him. Then he gets to Auburn. He has those elite receivers. We didn't really see the receivers shine, but we saw them make some plays. They definitely made some plays when they got the chances to. And he just looked like he was having so much fun. I'm not sure I saw Jackson Arnold smile last season. And there was a massive grin on his face the entire time he was playing on Friday night. That was really good to see. I think that my hype for Auburn, I think it's still there. I think it was supported with this game because going on the road against a Power 4 team who's also planning to contend in their conference, contend for a playoff bid, that's impressive to do, especially with a new quarterback, new pieces on the offensive line, a young secondary. That secondary was a problem. Their secondary was a problem. The Baylor, I mean, like Michael Trigg had a great day. It seemed like 8 to 10 yards in the middle of the field was wide open really the entire time. That was the issue for Auburn. Their secondary, their pass defense was not great. Sawyer Robertson had himself a day. It was a losing effort, but I mean, he threw for 419 yards and 3 scores. It was an awesome day for Sawyer Robertson, who I love him as a quarterback. But despite throwing for 419, you know, Auburn's only gave up 24. Part of that was stops on fourth and goal. But the secondary was definitely the problem spot for Auburn. But that seems like one of those things that has to come together over time, so I'm not overly worried about that. Big win for Auburn, who free start the year off. A little sip of water before I get to this next one. We're going to go Texas-Ohio State here. Now, I handed out the under as one of my favorite plays of the week. Under could not have been more automatic this entire game. I was very confident in this game being low scoring. If you had lobbed me 21.5 as the total, I probably would have gone over. I did not see 14-7 in the cards. But Texas did a great job of limiting Jeremiah Smith, who only caught 6 balls for 43 yards and had a few drops. Really, I mean, that Carnell Tate catch, if you run that same play 10 times, I'm not sure if he catches it more than 3 times. That almost seemed like a bit of a bad break for Texas. Obviously, it was an awesome catch by Tate, not taking anything away from his effort on that. But their defense played incredibly well, obviously, because holding the defending champs, even with a new quarterback and new running backs, that receiving room mainly, holding them to 14 at home is very impressive. And if you had asked Texas pregame, you know, will you take this right now, knowing nothing else about the game, Ohio State only scores 14, they're saying yes every single time. So the defense played really good, but what I was surprised with for them defensively, they had no sacks the entire game. I mean, that front seven for Texas is just too good for that to happen. And Ohio State's offensive line, it's good, but it wasn't this unit where I thought they were going to be able to really smother Texas's front, but they did. And one of the keys for Texas was definitely getting to Sayan early in his first career start, you know, get him off rhythm, make him nervous, hit him a little bit, and they just couldn't do that. They just couldn't do it. So, you know, they never really put Sayan in the spot where he was pressured to potentially make a mistake. I also talked pregame about the importance of Texas running the ball, and they ran it fine. I mean, Wisner had 80 yards, Baxter had 40, Arch had 38. It obviously, as we saw, wasn't enough for them. And the whole Arch thing, never once was he going to walk into Columbus and throw for 300-plus, several touchdowns, and look great. Never once was that even remotely a possibility, because this was his first ever start on the road in a very hostile environment against a top-3 team in week one of the season against the defending national champions. There isn't a human being on the planet who would walk in there and play to their full capability. And it's just a very challenging situation for him. And I've talked a lot this summer about how I thought this year Arch was going to be just another quarterback. 2026, I am very high on Arch to be a Heisman guy. This year, I talked about how I thought he might just look like every other good quarterback. He looked worse than I thought. Because going back through the tape, some of his mechanics, like it doesn't look like a 5-star guy at all. It looks like someone in high school who is going to fix that mechanic before he gets to college. Like when he was on the run, it was weird. Sidearms, the footwork was weird. We saw him, you know, skip a few passes. We saw that pick that he threw was just kind of floating in the air. Just mechanical things that I didn't think were going to be a problem. I didn't think the mechanics were going to be the issue at all. So the fact that it was concerns me a little bit. And what also concerns me is Steve Sarkisian's play calling. How in the world do you turn the ball over on downs twice inside the opponent's 10-yard line? I mean, 1 for 5 on fourth down, and none of those were even that long. I think the longest one was 4th and 5, unless I'm making that up. But I mean, there's not like a 4th and 15 in there that they had to go for that's skewing the number. Every single fourth down was in a spot where, aside from the last one, which was a 4th and 5, all the other four were like voluntary fourth downs. Like, we're choosing to go for it instead of kicking or punting. 1 for 5, man. I mean, you're this offensive guru, and you ended the season with a bad play call against Ohio State in the red zone, and then you come out and you do the exact same thing. I mean, literally making the same mistakes in almost the same situation with an offseason in between is really inexcusable. And I don't know how that happens. But It was a hard game, obviously. No one's going to look awesome going into Ohio State in that week. But Texas does have a lot more questions than I thought they would. Moving on to the Tennessee and Syracuse, the other noon game. Tennessee's passing game was much more explosive than I thought it was going to be. They spread the ball out really well. Aguilar had a good day, but 57% completion rate again. Right? Like, it works against Syracuse because you're able to hit some of those deep shots. That's not going to work when Georgia walks in. It's just not. I mean, his arm looked good. I was never really worried about his arm talent, but his arm talent definitely, it exceeded my expectations in that Syracuse game. Passing percentage just still isn't there for him. But what I did like for Tennessee a lot was that the rushing attack was good. I talked about how I think that was a sleepy unit on their team, that not many people were talking about their rushing attack and what it could be. Star Thomas ran for 92, Deshaun Bishop for 82, 248 total rushing yards for the team. Very impressive. And defensively, they had 5 sacks and 7 TFLs. Now, you're going up against Syracuse, but what's promising about that is that that's exactly what you're supposed to do. You are supposed to absolutely shut down and smother that inferior unit in Syracuse, and they did just that. I'm very high on Tennessee's defense. That's a great unit, and Jermod McCoy isn't even back yet. Offensively, yeah, they scored a lot of points. There was a defensive touchdown in there. Several turnovers for Syracuse. Aguilar's completion rate is still not where I want it to be because it was 57% against Syracuse. I'm worried about that when it comes to SEC play. Going down the Tallahassee, I mean, Alabama. I spent all summer, it wasn't just me, but I'll put it on myself right now. I spent all summer talking about how Saban is gone, but it's fine. That culture is still there. This is still Alabama. Some of a lot of the players that Saban had are still there. You know, there's a pride, there's a mentality that comes with playing for Alabama, and they're going to come out and show it. How in the world do you look that soft and that pathetic in your season opener? You had a whole summer with a bad taste in your mouth. You lost 3 games. You lost your bowl game to Michigan. You missed out on the playoff because you couldn't beat Vanderbilt and Oklahoma. And then you come out and lay an egg in week one because your defense just quits? How soft did they look in the interior of their defensive line? How weak was the effort chasing down in pursuit when FSU had the ball in the perimeter? It was pathetic. And Ryan Williams, man, at some point we've got to stop doing TikTok dances and playing. At some point you just do. Now, I'm not, for the record, that sounded like old man yelling at a cloud. I have no problem with players, you know, doing social media, having fun with it. But man, just Ryan Williams, that was a really bad showing from him. But to give some credit to FSU, because I thought they did play very well. It was a very diverse rushing attack. Castellanos had 78 in a score. Danzy had 56 yards in a score. He had the explosives to Jalen Lucas and Squirrel White in the passing game. FSU's offense looked much better than I thought it would. I did not give Gus Malzahn enough credit coming in. He had really kind of slipped my radar, and that's on me to not have coaches like that slip my radar, but he did a great job game planning. FSU's offense looked awesome. Bama just couldn't quite capitalize on some chances, which they have plenty of in the second half. I mean, when that punt hit, I forget who the return was for FSU, but it hit him, and Bama gets the ball in plus territory, down by 14. They get to that 4th-and-7. That was Ty Simpson's youth showing on that rollout, because he could have taken off for that and gotten 10 yards. Instead, he tried to make a really tough throw to Williams that was not on target. Williams almost made an awesome catch on that play, but the ball was not on target. Ty just didn't know to tuck it and run it and get to those sticks. So, I thought FSU did look good, but man, that was a sloppy, bad showing from Alabama, who had allegedly had this great week of prep. They were ready to address all the comments that Castellanos had made over the summer. I mean, man, they got embarrassed. They got really, really embarrassed. And I'm actually very curious where they end up ranked, because I would not be surprised if the voters saw how soft that performance was and really gave them the axe. On to the night slate for Saturday, LSU and Clemson. I hit this game at a 50% rate on my cap. Clemson's defense versus LSU's offense. I thought Clemson did a great job, because I'm not sure that anybody else for the rest of the year holds LSU to 17 points. That is such a good unit, and Clemson was able to just kind of get in their face, toughen it up. Granted, LSU should have 24, because that Berry and Brown catch was absolutely a touchdown. But the final score says 17. So I'm giving Clemson's defense credit, because they did play a good game. Where I was wrong, though, I thought that Clemson's offense was going to have a field day with Clemson with LSU's defense, especially with Halsey not being in the game in the first half. LSU's defense, it felt like they looked me straight in the eye and just said, watch this. Dude, that unit was awesome. They looked crazy fast. Their secondary had an incredible day, especially Mansoor Delane, who's the guy who had that pick off of Klubnik. They only had 2 sacks, but that doesn't tell the story of their pressure. I mean, Cade was rolling out and panicked to the right really the entire game, and that seemed like great scouting by LSU, knowing that he would want to quickly roll out to the right and being able to contain him with guys like Harold Perkins and Whit Weeks. Those guys are so fun to watch at linebacker. And that play Harold Perkins made on the fourth down to close the game, I mean, that just showed, reminded everybody how athletic this guy is. He is such a demon on defense, and he's going to remind the whole country that this year. Offensively, I thought Nussmeier looked way more in command and cerebral in this game than he did last year. I liked it a lot. I was worried a lot about his interceptions this summer. I'm less worried about that now because of how smart and collected he looked. Because in those road spots last year, he would throw multiple picks. We saw it happen. He did it at A&M. The Ole Miss and Bama games, he also threw multiple picks. This year seems like it's different. I mean, that place at Clemson, that place was loud. And that was a good defense. And he didn't have a turnover. It was great. And I really think in the red zone, lobbing the ball to Trey Des Green every single play is the only thing that makes any sense. I mean, that is such a cheat code. I love it. But I came away incredibly, incredibly impressed with LSU. Even though they only scored 17, once again, you can probably credit them with 24. LSU is legit, and they went way past what I thought of them over the summer. And the last big game was on Sunday, South Carolina versus Virginia Tech. Carolina was really working out those week one kinks, and you could kind of tell because after that first drive, which was an absolute march, they were really stifled for a while. But they started to get together in the second half. That Sellers to Harbor connection is so dangerous with how strong Lenoris's arm is and how easily Harbor can get behind every defense. Roswell Faison looked pretty explosive, and Oscar Attaway seemed like he was really that first option, but that's a really good running back room. And Lenoris Sellers is not a sackable human being. Like, the amount of times that a Vautech guy had him dead to rights, like not an arm tackle, full body, I've got you fully wrapped up, and then he just runs out for a first down. It was unbelievable, and I really liked Carolina's defense. I had picked the over in this game largely because I thought Kyren Drones was going to still be able to kind of get his, you know, and be able to put up a good bit of points. Obviously, Carolina also let me down on the over a little bit, but I mean, the Gamecocks defense limited Drones to 15 of 35 passing with 2 picks. I mean, Dylan Stewart looked just as dangerous as ever, just as explosive. I really liked watching Justin Okoronkwo at linebacker, who came in from Bama. He was really good on the perimeter, chasing down ball carriers. I'm worried about Judge Collier being hurt, just because we saw when he went down and the replacements came in, that side of the field, we started seeing some shots get taken there, and they were either caught or there were a few PIs. So hopefully that is nothing long-term. I forget who Carolina has this week. I'm pretty sure they get a cupcake. Just looking in real time, sorry. They have South Carolina State at home. Okay, so that'll be fine. But I do hope that Collier comes back pretty fast because he's a great player, and that's a big hole in Carolina's defense if he's gone for an extended period of time. All right, so the other games that happened this weekend that weren't big time. Thursday, we had Missouri play. 61-6 win over Central Arkansas. Really just gutted for Sam Horn. He was the other quarterback in the battle with Bo Prabula. Got hurt on, I believe it was his first snap. Or it was definitely his first drive. And then Prabula came in and kind of got the job by default. However, even if Sam didn't get hurt, I think Prabula was taking the job regardless. He was 23 of 28 passing for 283 yards and 2 touchdowns. He had a massive scramble for a touchdown. He carried the ball 10 times total for 65 and ran it in twice also. Ahmad Hardy, their running back who I've been very high on, had 10 carries for 100 yards. They looked really good. The defense was stifling against an inferior opponent like they should be. I'm getting excited about Missouri. I have them, I think I'm going 8-4. I'm still sticking with that. Although I guess I can't change my predictions now. They're predictions that I made preseason. But Missouri can get you. If you're asleep, Missouri can absolutely get you. Then Marshall and Georgia. I mean, this went exactly how it should have gone. Georgia handled business. After Marshall said they were going to shock the world. They shocked us all. No, they didn't. They didn't at all. I don't know where I was going with that. But Georgia handled business at home. That was good to see from Kirby. Oklahoma and Illinois State. Oklahoma only put up 35 points. They won 35-3. Now, that could be alarming to some people. There's no way that Oklahoma opened up the playbook for this game at all, because Michigan is walking in there, as I'm recording this, in 5 days. Oklahoma did not show their whole playbook to Illinois State. They just didn't. And even though they didn't do that, John Mateer was 30 of 37 throwing for 392 and 3 touchdowns. He did have a pick. Running-wise, they didn't do a whole lot of running. When they did, it was mainly Troy Blaylock. He carried the ball 8 times for 44 yards. Mateer had 7 carries for 24. And receiving-wise, they had 3 guys with 88 or more yards. Keontez Lewis had 119. Jaron Kanak, the tight end, had 90. And Deion Burks had 88. And defensively, obviously, they played very well. Only allowed 3 points. I liked what I saw from Oklahoma. I mean, that playbook was limited, so you didn't really get to see their offense explode. But I like what I'm seeing from them. I'm still very high on them as one of my playoff picks for this year. Texas A&M hosted UTSA. This game was a little closer than it should have been for a while, I think. Ended up winning 42-24. Marcel Reed was 22 of 34 passing for 289 and 4 scores. He was also their leading rusher with 8 carries and 39 yards. Reuben Owens only got the ball 5 times for 37. Le'Veon Moss 3 for 19. Mario Craver and Casey Concepcion had great days. I think they're going to be an elite receiver duo. I think Casey is one of the top receiver prospects coming out of the SEC this year for the draft. Craver had 8 catches for 122 and 2 scores. Casey had 3 catches for 72 and another score. So, yeah, I mean, A&M, this was a bit of a closer game. You would have liked to see them hold UTSA to less than 24, but, I mean, week one is week one. That's just how it's going to be. I think A&M's offense is going to be pretty legit, and Elko's going to figure out the defense. I'm not worried about that at all. Ole Miss dropped a bomb on Georgia State. Austin Simmons had 341 passing yards for 3 scores. Did throw 2 picks. I don't love that. But Kawan Lacy, their running back, had 16 carries for 108 and 3 scores. Logan Diggs had 7 carries for 91 and a touchdown also. Harrison Wallace III, a transfer receiver for them coming in from Penn State, had 5 catches for 130 and a touchdown. Daquan Wright and Caleb Odom also scored through the air, as did Isaiah Hartrup. Simmons also had a fumble, but he was able to fall back on it. It was not a lost fumble. And they only totaled up 1 sack, did Ole Miss's defensive front. That's something you want to see be a little higher. They did have 5 TFLs, so nothing wrong with that. But yeah, I'm not surprised that Ole Miss dropped the bomb on Georgia State. That is the Lane Kiffin style. He's not going to close the playbook. He's going to let it fly. The over-under for this game was 61.5, and Ole Miss scored 63. So that's pretty legit. And Ole Miss gets Kentucky in the first conference-v-conference SEC-v-SEC game this year. This week, I do think Ole Miss runs away with that one. We'll get into that one in the preview episode, though. Mississippi State at Southern Miss. Southern Miss was hanging out with them for a while, and I predicted this game was going to be close. But then to Mississippi State's credit, they pulled away. I did not have them pulling away, but they did. Won the game by 17. Blake Shapen threw for 270, a touchdown, also had a pick. And Shapen also ran. He ran out a little bit. I am actually just seeing this now. 6 carries for 5 yards. That's sack yardage included. But he did okay. And then the running backs, Devon Booth and Fluff Bothwell, I think are a great 1-2 punch for each other. Devon Booth had 16 carries for 79 yards and a score. Bothwell had 10 carries for 43 and 2 scores. Then receiving, Brennan Thompson led the team, 7 catches for 92 yards. Didn't get in, but Sidhu Treyor did. He had 5 catches for 77 yards. So, Mississippi State, they look pretty good. They look pretty good. I was reading a close game, and then when they were able to pull away, I was like, all right, that's pretty legit. Because Southern Miss, they're not a great team, but that was a big-time letdown spot for State to lose that game. And Mississippi State, they host Arizona State this week. Arizona State. So that's going to be a pretty big-time game. We'll have to see where that number comes out as, but that is a trap spot. Ultimate trap spot. Toledo and Kentucky, I hit Toledo plus 10. I liked it, and they got it for me because of a safety. They lost by 8, but at one point they had a safety in there. Without that, we lose by 10, but we're good. Zach Calzada threw for 85 yards. He was 10 of 23 in the air, did not throw a touchdown, but had a pick. I mean, that is not good. But the good, however, is that Dante Dowdle carried the ball 14 times for 129 and a score. Seth McGowan had 18 carries for 78 yards and also a score. The running game is what's going to move the ball for Kentucky. It's very clear that the passing game is not going to exist. It's just not going to. With Calzada and these receivers, Kentucky's defense did rack up 3 sacks and 6 TFLs. Nothing wrong with that. But yeah, I'll give you guys a bit of a peek ahead to my preview about Ole Miss Kentucky. I like Ole Miss. Then finally, last game of the week, Arkansas hosting Alabama A&M. They won 52-7. Taylen Green had himself a nice little day, 24 of 31 passing for 322 yards and 6 touchdowns through the air. Excuse me. 2 of those went to C.J. Brown. 1 went to Omega Blake, who led that receiver room. He had 7 catches for 121, along with that score. Jaylen Brown and Raylan Sharp also caught touchdowns. Mike Washington Jr., who there was a lot of buzz out around camp, he also caught a touchdown. Running the ball, Mike Washington Jr. Say his name 100 times this year because I think he's that kind of playmaker for Arkansas. He had 9 carries for 79. Didn't get in. They had no rushing touchdowns, mainly because Taylen Green took them all in the air. But Green also did run for 41 yards. Arkansas's offense did what it was supposed to do, you know, relied on the guys they were supposed to, and got it done. So that's about it. That was week one in the SEC. Week two coming up. There's a sneaky amount of good games. This USF versus Florida game, that could be competitive. It could be pretty competitive. Vandy at Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech's only laying a point. Point and a half right now. That's going to be a good one, too. Ole Miss and Kentucky, conference play starting. Kansas and Missouri is going to be beautiful television. Arizona State and Mississippi State, I think that could be a sneaky close game. ASU's opening up as a 6.5-point favorite. That number being below a touchdown tells you a lot. And Michigan at Oklahoma. Oklahoma laying 2.5. But if you guys have listened to me so far, yeah, I think you know who I'm picking in that game. But that'll do it for the week one recap episode of Tailgate Talk SEC. Thank you guys so much for tuning in, and I will see you on the next episode.